Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm delighted to welcome a social entrepreneur, Pradeep Ghosh, to our show. Pradeep, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Pradeep is the founder of Oasis, which is a social innovations laboratory. He is developing new models for the social sector, and he's an Ashoka Fellow from 2004. So, Pradeep, what would you say are three key milestones in your life?
Milestones, I would say, because when I started my journey, I started my career as an IT professional way back in 1986, when I was just 20 years old. Mm-hmm. And at that point of time, I just thought that, you know, I would be able to do something great in this sector. Mm-hmm. And of course, I was fortunate enough that because of some innovativeness, I could actually go pretty fast, pretty well, and pretty mm-hmm. high. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, after 15 years, I was leading an organization, the Asia-Pacific region of that organization, mm-hmm. managing about 10 countries. So at that point of time, I thought that, you know, this I've reached a stage where I cannot grow any more functionally. Mm-hmm. So I do not want to become an administrator, you know, and all that stuff. So I said, this is one milestone that I can think of for mm-hmm. myself. But then what next? I need to make my life more meaningful. Mm-hmm. And that is when I started thinking much about the meaning in life and, you know, the general turning point in life that people have in a midlife crisis. Mm-hmm. So I was 35 around that time. And then I said, let me make my life more meaningful. Mm-hmm. And just with a, you know, blind jump into a well, I left the corporate sector and jumped into the social sector.
Okay.
Not knowing what to do. Right. And then as I started working on it, trying to understand the sector and then develop some good innovative models. Mm-hmm. And then came the Ashoka Fellowship, which mm-hmm. came out of the blue. So I didn't even know, you know, much about it. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I became known as a social entrepreneur in India. I said, wow, this is another milestone for me. Mm-hmm. Then. Mm-hmm. But then I think a bigger milestone happened when we could actually do a lot of wonderful things in our organization for the development sector. Mm-hmm. And we created about new models, and those got international recognitions, accepted worldwide. Mm-hmm. That is when, you know, I really found my life to be fruitful, worthwhile enough that yes, I have contributed to society in a big way.
Terrific.
So that was the next milestone that happened. Uh-huh. The other ones are about to follow now. So
I'm sure there are some great milestones. So let's now move on and talk about Oasis, mm-hmm. which you say is a special innovations laboratory. Mm-hmm. Tell me about what you do here.
So, you know, just a bit of a genesis of that, a background of it, that mm-hmm. when I entered this sector, I was basically coming from a corporate environment, and I was trying to figure out that what is it that I can add value to this social sector, you know. Mm-hmm. I just didn't want to do the usual things that were happening. And then while exploring, I figured out that while all industries have got research laboratories, mm-hmm. out of which new products and processes come out, mm-hmm. social sector being such a big industry did not have a research laboratory. Mm-hmm. All the research that was happening was primarily, you know, for data collection, analysis, report writing, right. some in influencing policy, some going into publications, the rest into cupboards and, mm-hmm. you know, waste bins. So I said, this sector is so evolving. People's needs are continuously changing. People's aspirations are continuously evolving. Mm-hmm. Community needs are changing. Mm-hmm. How long can old models work? But where is the platform to experiment new approaches and new models? Mm. So I found, wow, this is a gap that I need to fill. And that is when we started Oasis, the first social innovations laboratory.
Okay.
And what we basically do here is we identify issues, either we identify or people help us identify. And then we research on those issues as to why they have been here for so long. Mm-hmm. And we go down to the root cause and do all that stuff. Mm-hmm. We also try to research on solutions that have been tried out earlier mm-hmm. and failed. So, and then we come up with an innovative kind of an approach, which is simple, practical, replicable. We then pilot the approach ourselves first with the same community,
okay,
with whom we are trying to do it. And then once the pilot is successful, then we put it up as a model in the public domain for replication by anyone.
Wonderful.
No credits required, nothing required. So just go ahead and replicate.
Can you give me an example of one such instance?
We were trying to figure out that in education, there is a huge gap, you know, there is a huge disparity in the quality of education itself.
Okay.
Right? We do talk about right to education and all that stuff. But then the disparity lies in the quality of education between a child who can afford and a child who cannot afford.
Okay.
So different economic sections. So let's take, for example, an urban scenario. In an urban scenario, you've got, you know, the best schools in the city, which primarily address to the most affluent family. And you've got children in slums who are going to the regular government schools. Although the methodology of learning at both the places is the same, but if you look at the quality of education, it is vastly different, right? Now, we said that education is the foundation of the country. If there is a huge disparity in the foundation itself, how do you expect equality at any point of time? So we need to address this disparity right here at this level itself. And then we try to figure out, you know, what is it that in the first place determines quality. So then we started researching and we found three parameters. A good infrastructure that makes a child curious to learn, good quality teaching aids, and good quality teachers.
Okay.
If these three are ensured, you can ensure quality.
Okay.
The problem was that all these three things come at a cost. So how do you get it for children who cannot afford? So then we moved around the city and, you know, we tried to research a lot of models like Rabindranath Tagore's Shantiniketan model, Aurobindo Ashram model, Japanese model of education, Rishi Valley models. We experiment. We actually researched on a lot of them. And then we found that every city that has got a lot of children out of school, such cities also have lots of museums. And all these museums are either subject focused. For example, for science, you've got a science museum. For history, you've got an archaeology museum. So either they are subject focused or they've got subject focused galleries.
Okay.
And they have exhibits for all ages. So right from a child to an adult can understand easily if someone explains an exhibit without reading a single letter out of a book.
Right.
So we said, wow, these are wonderful tools. Why can't they be used as teaching aids? So what we did was we collaborated with the museums, saying that we'll bring children here every day to study.
Okay.
We mapped the exhibits with the curriculum of the children from sixth grade onwards to 12th grade. And then the biggest problem was that where do we find quality teachers, right? Subject experts. We found that they were sitting right there in the museum as staff because they were recruited on the basis of their knowledge expertise.
Right.
So we took we enrolled some teachers from the same community from where the children come, some educated girls, and we got them trained by this museum staff.
Okay.
So what we got for the children was an infrastructure which very few schools can match, teaching aids which no school in the world can match, and quality teachers, all at no cost.
Amazing.
So that became the museum school, the first one in the country. So 2 hours every day, six days a week, 11 months a year, for the past 15 years, this model has been running. Children who have come out of the museum school are now, they're working with TCS and other places also. That's the kind of development that has happened. And then we got the UNESCO Asia Pacific Education Innovation Award in 2015.
Congratulations.
So, oh, that happened. That, so this is one amazing. of the models that, you know.
Yeah, very interesting. Very, very interesting. And this museum school is now being replicated across multiple schools, I would imagine.
Not multiple schools, but multiple cities.
Multiple cities, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So we don't work with schools, but cities are such. So slum children are there. They come from various slums. From and they also go to probably multiple government schools as well. They come to the museums and that is where they are taught.
Okay. So, you know, from the time you were an IT person to the time now that you've got your well-known, acknowledged, respected, recognized as a social entrepreneur, tell me what are what have been some of your challenges and some of your learnings?
Oh, challenges are many, countless challenges. See, the first challenge came in when the social sector does not support innovations in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily because all the funds that come in, they look at projects or approaches that have proved themselves,
mm-hmm.
right? So and innovations, the pilots, they take time to prove.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, one of the funders asked me that, what is the guarantee that your innovation is going to succeed?
Mm.
I said, any innovation has got a 50% success rate and a 50% failure rate as well.
Mm.
Now, it all depends, you bank your money on what?
Mm.
On the failure or on the success?
Mm.
So if you think that this has got a higher success of probability, give us your funds. Mm. If you think that it won't work, don't give us. It's absolutely up to you.
Mm.
Ultimately, they gave the fund to us. There's a big, there's a huge lack of funding support for innovation. That is mm-hmm. one. The second is Indian mindset. Generally, what happens is that anything that comes from the Western countries is easily acceptable.
Yeah.
Whether or not that is suited for the Indian context, but that mm-hmm. is acceptable. But homegrown things, there's a very good saying in Hindi that ghar ki murgi dal barabar.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that goes everywhere, Despite, I'll tell you, despite a museum school being recognized internationally,
mm-hmm.
the Indian government or the state government has still not Amazing. Shown interest in accepting it.
Mm-hmm.
So those are, I think, the bigger challenges
right.
that usually come.
And some of your learnings?
Well, learnings have been many. Mm-hmm. You need to have a lot of patience to work in this sector because it doesn't work like corporate that, you give a task and it gives you results. No,
mm-hmm.
Results come at their own pace.
Mm-hmm.
I've the biggest learning has been that I understand people much better now because I've been able to develop that capacity to go down to the level of the person or mm-hmm. go up to the level of the person mm-hmm. with whom I'm interacting and understand from his perspective. So the multiple lenses that I have acquired to look at something from different perspectives is something that's been the biggest learning for me.
Fantastic.
And it helps me, solve a lot of issues pretty easily now.
Mm. So, Pradeep, when I was looking at your bio, et cetera, one of the things that you're working on is something called a social enterprise incubator.
Yeah.
Where I'm assuming you incubates social enterprise organizations.
That's right.
Question to you is, how are you this different from one of the regular incubators that where private equity is involved?
See, an incubator is an incubator at the end of the day.
Correct.
And it helps, and any business is a business.
Hmm.
The only difference is that, what is a social enterprise, right? Hmm. So while a regular enterprise is primarily meant for profit making to be enjoyed by a few individuals who are, owners of that company or shareholders,
hmm.
a social enterprise, the entire profit is actually enjoyed by the society itself or by the community for whom you're working.
Okay.
So you need, for a social, for a business enterprise, you need to have the head of a businessman and the heart of a businessman also.
Mm.
Whereas in a social enterprise, you need to have the head of a businessman, but the heart of a social worker.
Mm.
So you need to understand, that empathizing the society for whom you're working and then, planning your entire business model accordingly is the trick in the social enterprise.
Wonderful.
And so what I try to do is I basically try to inculcate this aspect of the social empathy,
mm-hmm.
even in business enterprises. Because if they have not looked at that side, I say that, listen, it's not bad to make a profit, but it is bad to enjoy the profit alone. Enjoy it with everyone, mm-hmm. who has helped you in this whole organization, mm-hmm. the community that you're working with, the community that you're working for. So try to understand the group that you're working with and the one you're working for. And then you see that, how the profit needs to be
mm-hmm.
regulated and enjoyed and whatever.
Very fascinating. My conversation with you is so interesting. I've not had such detailed discussions with anyone on social entrepreneurship. So I'm going to just continue asking you some more. For someone again who has built such an amazing name for himself, what are some of the core values you believe in?
Oh, honesty, sincerity, transparency,
mm-hmm.
commitment, consistency, perseverance, patience. How many more should I give?
Okay.
But, this is a combination that if you don't have this,
mm.
then it becomes very difficult to reach an objective, a goal. Usually people dream a lot, but then to realize a dream, you need all these things to put together, then only you realize a dream. Otherwise, it's half-baked solution.
Fascinating. And what would you say is your leadership style?
So, people tell me usually that whenever I try to lead a group, and they find that I don't take any work for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends up that everyone does everything, and I don't do anything. So they say that, how is it that, why do you delegate everything? Why don't you don't take anything on yourself? So I said, well, the best way of the whole world shows that the best way of leadership is that the others should work hard and the leader should hardly work.
Correct.
So that's of course the humorous part of it. But basically, I find that, leadership can be best done, and that is how I practice this. That give the person who is not experienced the flag to hold. Because when that person gets the flag to hold, there are two things that happen. One is that since he does not know anything or how to lead, he ends up consulting others. So a leader without consultation becomes an autocrat. So that leader develops the quality of consulting the team before taking a decision. And the others in the team, despite their experiences, more than this leader, they end up advising the right thing because they want the entire team to succeed.
Okay.
It is not the leader to succeed, but the entire team to succeed.
Okay.
So, that works very well. When you put an inexperienced person as a leader, everything happens automatically. You don't need to do anything else.
Wonderful. So one more question before I move to some questions personally for you. This is the age of the millennials and the Gen Zs, and they're coming into every sector.
Yeah.
My question is, how are they changing the social sector?
A big way, big way. Why I say this is because, probably they have more courage, exposure, and options than we had, probably our generation had. Of course, internet and, the entire media has actually exposed them to a lot of things.
Correct.
So there are more people now jumping into the sector. Social entrepreneurship has become a fashionable thing now.
I know.
Earlier, it was not so fashionable.
Yeah.
So, and the Gen X and the Gen Z, they primarily move towards fashion. So, it's very well said that, anything that you want to actually implement, if you make it a fashion statement, it gets implemented automatically without any administration. So probably social entrepreneurship has been built up that way, that it's now become fashionable. So a lot of Gen Z are coming. But there is a bigger problem attached to it as well. The problem is that this Gen Z is getting exposed to so many subsectors within the social sector that it is becoming very difficult for them to freeze on something to begin with. So, I'm trying to, tell all these youth that it's good to have an exposure. It's good to, be exposed towards many things. But then if you don't do a deep dive into one particular thing, then you will not be able to understand any dimension of the sector. So if you want to become a social entrepreneur, after a certain range of exposure, choose one to deep dive into. If you dig 20 wells of 1 foot each, you'll never get water. But if you dig one well of 20 feet, probably you'll get water.
Right.
So that's what I'm trying to tell them. It's very difficult, but it'll happen slowly.
Very interesting. So Pradeep, now we're going to move to the last segment of our conversation, which is some questions for you personally.
Okay.
My first question is that as you look back at life, with so much recognition, and you're obviously very, very satisfied with what you're doing, what does success mean to Pradeep?
An easy exit can be termed as the best success.
Okay.
If
exit from a company or from the life?
No, exit from what currently I'm doing. If I'm able to hand it over properly. To the next gen and exit myself without the next line requiring me, that is the best success.
Okay.
And in terms of financial sustainability, usually, when people ask me that, how would I make my organization or my company successful? So I tell them just one thing, that success is not, you know, when you have raised enough money. Success would come in when you do not need any money. So if you come to that stage when either the company does not need any money, does not need any external support, it is well equipped within, and even does not require you to exist in the company, that is when success is.
Terrific. A follow-up question to that is, who or what inspires you?
Many. So, of course, I'm inspired a lot by Gandhiji, Vivekananda, and all these people who have really, you know, said some very Aurobindo. So these are people who have said very insightful things, probably which have very deep meaning. They have talked about the philosophy of life, how to, you know, how to make your life possible. So I do get inspired by all of them, but I have not fixed a role model for me yet. And the reason is that I do not go on to get fixated onto one particular ideology. If I get fixated onto that, my learning would stop.
Okay.
So I want to keep learning throughout my life, explore things, learn more, and then try to develop my own ideologies, my own philosophy in life, which I think would work better for me, because as an individual, I would have my own way of thinking.
Very interesting.
That's what I do.
My next question is a question on failure. And I've often said that parents in India don't teach children it's okay to fail.
Absolutely.
You're always to come first, go to the head of the line, et cetera, et cetera. And that manifests itself in our behavior patterns.
Right.
Yet we fail. So my question to you is, what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
Just to ask a second question to this. So I ask people that if you have ever failed, when I ask someone, you know, that how many of you have failed? And there are a lot of hands up. So I ask them, have you ever failed repeatedly in the same thing? And the answer is usually no. So I say that, why don't you fail a second time? So people generally say that because we put in all our efforts to so that we do not fail a second time. I said, that is exactly what you are. So you have the capacity, you have the capability that you do not allow yourself to fail a second time. So I when I fail in something, I just redo it all over again, and I ensure that whatever have been the reasons of failure earlier do not come in now. So obviously, you know, it's the same natural instinct that does not let you fail twice. But it is always good to fail once, because without failures, you will never learn anything.
I agree.
So
My last question to you. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, please.
So I'm saying that I allow myself to fail. I allow my children to fail as well. And I say that until unless you fail, you'll never learn, but don't fail twice.
Very well said. And my last question to you, and this is for the thousands of people who listen to our conversation, what would your advice be to a young individual who started off on her or his journey in the social sector?
Great. So one thing is that be confident. You know, whatever comes your way, people insult you, say anything to you, don't just think that you are not good. Be confident of what you're doing. Keep doing. You know, there is, you will actually develop a lot of patience and persistence in yourself if you keep doing things. Be absolutely transparent and honest. That is what brings you credibility.
Right.
Even if your initiative fails, your credibility will never fail. And that will take you places to many people.
Okay.
So be consistent in what you're doing, maintaining absolute honesty, the right intent, and 100% transparency in what you're doing. You will always succeed. There is no reason for failure.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Pradeep, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I mean, I have learned a lot about the social sector from you.
Come on.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Ashutosh. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.